Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the June 12, 2014 meeting of the San Luis Obispo County Planning Commission. Madam Clerk, would you call the roll?
Commissioner Meyer?
Here.
Commissioner Topping?
Here.
Commissioner Campbell?
Here.
Commissioner Irving?
Here.
And Chairperson Murphy?
Here. Would you all stand and join me in a pledge to our flag?
States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, at this point, I'll open up the podium for public comment. Anybody wishing to speak, please fill out a speaker slip. There's some in the back and also some here in the front table. You'd be limited to 3 minutes, and it's only for items that are not on today's agenda. At this point, I have no speaker slips. I see nobody coming forward. Therefore, I'll go ahead and close public comment, and we'll move on to planning staff updates.
Good morning, Commissioners. Nancy Orton, County Planning. I'm going to go over your schedule for the next month or so. The June 26th meeting is canceled. We will let you know about the July 10th meeting. There's still a little time on that one. There will definitely be a meeting on July 24th, and we note that Mr. Irving will be absent. And it's doubtful that there'll be a meeting on July 31st, but stay tuned on that one also. And I've asked Cammie to say a few words about our budget getting approved this week.
Hello. Commissioners, Cammie Griffin, Assistant Director, Planning and Building Department. I did want to just let the commission know that on Tuesday, the Board of Supervisors did give tentative approval to the department's budget, as well as the rest of the departments in the county's budget. The final approval will occur next Tuesday. They do that with tentative action on the week of the hearings and then final action the following week. The key part of that budget is a new service that I wanted to let the commission know about, where the new Atascadero Library is. Upstairs, the county will be opening North County Service Center with the assessor's office, the clerk's office, and our office. And as part of the budget, we were able to get a position which will allow us to actually be open and available to the public and be able to deal and issue with building permits. So we were able to get what we call a land use technician position, which will allow us to be open to the public. Right now, we do have staff in the North County, our North County inspectors, and we have a plan checker up there, but they're not available to the public because we don't have the person who's able to be a cashier and determine fees and things like that. And we actually did receive that position in the budget, so we'll be able to be open to the public, and the clerk will be open to the public as well as the assessor. That full opening will happen probably in the fall. But that's a new service we'll be able to offer our North County residents. For most things, they won't have to come down to San Luis Obispo, which will be really great and save on vehicle miles travel to solve a budget cut, a budget gap. It was the first time we actually had a teeny bit of a surplus. So admin is being very strategic about adding programs back in and with the budget, with the board's directive and priorities in their mind. And so this was the first year of that kind of a budget, which was nice after a lot of years of cuts. Other than that addition, our budget was a pretty simple, business as usual status quo budget.
So this is going to be the first year of pleasure.
Versus the pain plan. I don't know that it's a pleasure plan quite yet, but versus the pain plan, it was a lot less painful.
So that concludes staff comments.
Okay, so we'll move to our consent agenda. Does any member of the commission or public wish to pull and speak to any item on the consent agenda? If we do, if someone wishes to speak, again, if you would fill out a speaker slip and they turn it into the commission, and you come to the podium, please state your name for the record. And
Mary Webb, Cambria. I'm just speaking as a member of the public and would like to pull the Cambria Community Services District item A1 for discussion, because there was a lot of questions in the community about this emergency permit. And for me, one of the issues, well, I don't know, can it be pulled first before I?
Yes.
So one of the issues for me is that the permit is only to authorize the water treatment plant while we're under a CCSD declared stage 3 water shortage emergency. And I don't, I want to know what the definition of that is. It seems to me that there is a stage 3 emergency, there's stage 3 CCSD ordinances, and then there is this language called the CCSD declared stage 3 water shortage emergency. And I don't see definitions of any of those things. Then there's also the level 3 water shortage emergency that the county declares when the water has exceeded, when the development has exceeded supply. And we are a level 3 community. Our water level has, the supply, the demand has exceeded the supply, but we've never been certified as a level 3. So all the county ordinances that are supposed to kick in when you're certified level 3 have never kicked in for Cambria, even though we've been in a moratorium since 2001. So I just have a lot of questions about what is going to constitute the CCSD declared stage 3 water shortage emergency. And the other issues we have with the project are that, first of all, that we're in this emergency, but there doesn't seem to be much activity going on out there, and that other actions in town have not taken place preceding this need for an emergency permit. In other words, all the tourism events are continuing. The Amgen race continued and brought 5,000 more people into our town. There's no curtailment of the 4th of July event that's going to be happening. There's no talk of curtailing Pine Dorado, which is, you know, usually brings in, well, I think last year we normally use 600,000 gallons per day of water, and last year for Pine Dorado we used 1 million. So 400,000 more gallons were used every single day for Pine Dorado last year. So there's no talk right now about curtailing those events. So it would seem to me that if we're in an emergency, that a lot of these other activities should have been prevented before we're in this state where we need to be putting in a $6,000 an acre foot project. I think that's it. Thank you.
All right. I'm not used to having an item pulled off the consent agenda. Do we treat this as an item for discussion? I guess we do discussion, though. This is a receive and file item at this point, is my understanding, although I believe there's a requirement to come back for a regular permit with a hearing with an application within so many days. So it will eventually come back to the commission for a public hearing, although they'll be in operation possibly before we even hear the permit application.
That's correct. This is Whitney McDonald from the County Council's office. First, I'll address the procedural component of this. I think it's up to your commission's discretion whether or not you'd like to actually pull the item for discussion. It sounds like that's a consensus, perhaps, that you'd like to go ahead and discuss it maybe briefly. I'm not sure if there were any other members of the public who wished to speak about other consent items. You may want to close that up first and then come back to deciding whether to pull that particular permit and have a discussion. And also, I believe staff...
Approve item B of the consent agenda first?
Yes. I move to approve item B.
Second.
Does that take a roll call? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Abstain.
All right. And then we'll go to item C. And I get a motion
I'll
on
move
that.
To move item C.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Yes.
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. All right. Brings us back to item A. What's your pleasure, commissioners? Would you like to have a little discussion on this?
Commissioner for the district, I think it's always helpful for people to have more information than less. And so If staff wants to briefly respond to the questions by Ms. Webb, I think that would be helpful.
Of course, Commissioner Topping. This is Nancy Orton, County Planning. Myself and Erlyn Singewald were involved in processing this emergency permit for the Cambria CSD. And a lot of the questions that Ms. Webb brought up in terms of how are they going to monitor water in the future and what is the difference between, she seemed to have some questions between the wording of the declared three emergency, are really questions for the district. I mean, I know that for the I'm aware that for the Amgen event, porta potties were used and the certain facilities that typically had water were using sand instead for some of the physical infrastructure that was used for that day. And I know that my understanding was that they made a major effort to conserve as much water as possible. In terms of Pine Dorado and the 4th of July, that really is up to, I'm not sure what the district's plans are for that. And in terms of what's happening, she mentioned that, well, we're not seeing anything going on up there, and they were issued a permit. The first thing that they had to do was put in a couple of wells in order to do what's called a tracer study in order to prove to the Regional Water Quality Control Board and the State Public Health Department that they should issue them their two very important permits for the water supply project that they're proposing. So there is a lot of upfront and behind-the-scenes work that is going on before they actually, bring in equipment and things like that and get up and running. And so that upfront time is important because based on the district's calculations and backing up from when they believe very strongly that they could be out of water, all of those permit time frames backed up until now. And so we were able to issue them a permit in May, towards the end of May.
So this matter will be coming back before the Planning Commission.
Yes, actually, that's right. They have 30 days to submit a regular land use permit. And when that gets processed, that will be a development plan, and that does come before the Planning Commission.
And just thinking ahead, is there any way to anticipate when that might come forward?
That would be pretty speculative at this point.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. But it would be before the time that this permit expires. In other words, this permit has an expiration date on it, right? And so sometime between now and then, it has to come here.
The way that the permit reads right now is that they are allowed to operate this emergency facility while their land use permit is being processed.
Yeah.
And so we all are working together to get that processed in a timely manner.
Yeah, so the important thing for them is to get the new facility or the emergency service in and operating.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then the matter would come back here after environmental and other review by staff.
That is correct.
Okay.
Yes.
Well,
and I think the main point, the planning director has issued the permit. So
right.
It comes to us to review, receive, and file. At this point, we aren't even going to take action on it.
Okay.
And we're anticipating an application being filed within 30 days. And then that current permit, the way I understand it, continues until such time as we make a decision here at the planning
ordinance.
But it's not technically LOS 3. under the RMS at this point?
It's not a certified. So there's a difference between when the board certifies a level of severity 3 or when it's just designated as a level of severity 3. And the board in this case hasn't certified.
Well, I appreciate the commission and staff's forbearance in just getting these questions clarified. And I'm sure if there's anything that we've missed, County Council would tell us.
If I could just clarify the question about a potential expiration date of the permit and the discussion about how long this is in effect. Commissioner Murphy was correct that it is in effect while they are processing the permit, but there are limits on when they can use it. It's only during a declared stage 3 water emergency. So if the drought ends and the CCSD board determines that they're no longer in a stage 3, they need to turn the system off. But we're not requiring them to break it down and pull it out at that point in time, as long as they're continuing to process their regular coastal development permit through the county during that time. If, we're back in another drought and they have another stage 3, because, it's hard to tell. And could be that this drought doesn't end for another year, could end and come back. It's hard to tell what might happen, and it's also a little hard to tell how long it will take us to get that regular CDP to your commission. So that's why the condition 2 is worded the way that it is. That helps.
Thank you. Well, I'm prepared to make a motion.
All right.
To approve consent item A1 on our consent calendar.
All right. Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Is this to approve it or receive and file?
Well, we're basically approving the item, which is to receive and file.
Which is
to
receive. Clear enough.
Did we?
Try it again.
All those in favor? Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
So moved. All right. Right, we'll move on to hearing item number 1. Ramona's not here. Nicole, if you'd introduce it today.
Hearing to consider a request by California Department of Transportation for a minor use permit, variance, and coastal development permit. County file number DRC 2013-00052, Supervisorial District 2, Megan Martin, Project Manager.
Good morning.
Good morning, Chairman Murphy, Commissioners. Good to see you this morning. Megan Martin, Project Manager from Planning Department of the County. The project before you is a request on behalf of California Department of Transportation for minor use permit, coastal development permit, and variance. The applicant is requesting these items because of several storms that have occurred during March 2011. A landslide along Highway 1 at the northern limits of San Luis Obispo County, known as Elephant Trunk, has reactivated and caused damage to Highway 1, which is at the location is approximately 0.8 miles north of Ragged Point, between post mile 73.7 and post mile 73.9. To permanently stabilize the highway at this location, an approximately 1,000-foot-long soldier pile wall will be constructed downslope of Highway 1 on slopes greater than 30%. As part of the project, the roadway width would be brought up to current design standards. Existing roadway conditions contain an 11-foot lane with generally no paved shoulder and a very narrow space between the edge of the road and the steep uphill slope. The new roadway would be slightly straightened and widened to accommodate a 12-foot lane with 4-foot shoulder in each direction. Construction activity would occur at night to minimize impacts to vehicular traffic during peak hours. The project will remove up to 57 sea cliff buckwheat plants, which are the host plant for the Smith's blue butterfly, a federally endangered species. Also, another species that has been spotted at this project site is the American peregrine falcon, which is a fully protected species. The project site is located on Highway 1 at the northern limits of San Luis Obispo County. It is located in the North Coast Planning Area in the Rural Lands Land Use Category. It is located in a geologic study area and a sensitive resource area. The project is also in the coastal zone. So this shows an aerial photograph of the project site and its boundaries. The arrows point to the northernmost limit and the southernmost limit, and this is the northernmost limit. This is the southernmost limit. It will stretch for approximately 850 feet along Highway 1. The steep slopes above and below the highway are sparsely vegetated with a mixture of native coastal scrub plants and invasive weeds. This photograph was taken at the variance does not constitute a grant of special privileges, and there are special circumstances applicable to the property related to topography and geography. There are no alternative locations for this to occur. The landslide is where it is, and this is where there is a need. Additionally, the variance is required because the topography, as I mentioned earlier, are on slopes of excess 30%. This does not authorize a use that is not otherwise authorized in the land use category. The land use is rural lands. Grading is allowed in the rural land use category. It is consistent with the provisions of the local coastal program, and it does not adversely affect public health or safety. In fact, it is working to improve public safety, as if there were to be another landslide, it could potentially inundate the highway itself. So what will this look like? As I mentioned earlier, the project lies along Highway 1. That is a state, it's an all-American road in the National Scenic Byway System, and it's designated State Scenic Highway. And it is also the Pacific Coast Bike Trail runs along Highway 1. So the photograph on the lower left-hand side is an example of what the soldier pile wall will look like. The photograph to the right of that is what it will look like from the highway, from grade at the highway. It will be a 50-foot soldier pile wall. Majority of the wall will be buried below the highway, downslope of Highway 1. It will be textured and treated to blend with the area, and soil will be backfilled over the wall to match the naturally occurring topographic features and slope of the area. It will also be revegetated with sea cliff buckwheat and native coastal scrub plants to restore the habitat and also prevent future sedimentation and erosion. There is one coastal stream that crosses the project site. The photographs on the right side above and below are, where's my mouse? This is looking north along Highway 1. This is looking south along Highway 1, but it is the exact same defined coastal stream as is identified in our local coastal plan on our maps. But as you can see, it's not necessarily a stream in terms of capacity. It's more of a natural drainage, and that will remain and not be touched during construction. So the last few slides that I have for you, I'm just going to take you on a drive through Highway 1 just so you can get a feel for where this is located, the extent of the work, and also just to witness the steep slopes. So this is the southernmost edge of the project. Moving along, you'll see the steep slopes, the coastal scrub on either side. They're both invasive and native. The cones designate one of the areas where there was inundation from the slide. Additional sliding and highway repair that was required to temporarily stabilize. Additional road repair to stabilize the road, and you can see again coastal scrub, native and invasive species on either side, steep slopes all the way, and this is the northernmost edge, which I showed you at the beginning, looking south, and that gives you kind of a better indication of just how steep these slopes will be. So with that said, staff recommends the Planning Commission consider and rely on the previously approved negative declaration adopted June 19, 2013, prepared by Caltrans acting as lead agency, as well as approve the minor use permit, coastal development permit, and variance for DRC 2013-00052 based on revised findings listed in Exhibit A. They were the findings for the variance were discussed in depth within the staff report, but were inadvertently left out of the findings attached as Exhibit A, and I've made those corrections, and we can look at those if you'd like. So based on the revised findings listed in Exhibit A and the conditions listed in Exhibit B, Thank you. This concludes staff's presentation, and I'm available for any questions you might have.
Does any commissioner have any questions at this point? Commissioner Topping?
Just quickly, the revised findings on the variance.
Yes.
Maybe you could read it for us.
Letters G through K are each of the required findings necessary to support a variance. The first being it does not constitute a grant of special privileges. The second is there are characteristics of the site that require the variance. The third, it is allowed in the land use category. It is consistent with the local coastal program, and that's a finding that's required in the coastal zone. It's not necessarily, it is not required in the inland, so that's an additional.
Do you have any comments on that?
I believe that it would be acceptable to bicyclists. It will be including a 4-foot shoulder on either side, north and southbound. However, I would like to turn that question to Caltrans. I believe our representative is here this morning, and she can speak to that effect.
I'm sorry, I was collecting a slip. What was the question?
Could you come up to the mics, please?
So this is Paula Huddleston with Caltrans. She's the project manager for Caltrans on the project.
My question had to do with a comment letter from the North Coast Advisory Council regarding the material to be used on in creating the shoulder so that we don't have a repeat of the rough surface for bicyclists, and I just wanted to hear a comment from you on that.
Well, let me throw that actually back to the designer. I believe it's our standard asphalt concrete, but can I get a? This is Susan Lozen. She's the actual engineer on the project.
Hi, my name is Susan Lozon, and I'm the project engineer for this project. The asphalt that will be used is going to be your standard HMA or asphalt concrete.
Yeah. Could you get closer to the mic, please, or pull it towards you? Thank you.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay. There will, as I understand, there was a chip seal in the area, and that's a concern for people. There will not be any chip seal on
okay.
this particular project.
Great.
No chip seal.
No chip seal.
Excellent. Keep the bicycle community happy.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I did want to make one correction. We have an existing 30-foot easement. We're going to have to extend that easement for the wider highway, and the highway shifting slightly. So we will still be on an easement. We don't own the property out there, and it's from that private individual. Okay.
All right. Could I ask you both to fill out speaker slips, if you would, before you're done?
Thank you.
And one question on the traffic control. At night, is traffic still allowed through, or is it shut down completely for the construction between 9 and 6?
There will be times that will be set down.
I should have asked her.
There we go. We'll be able to turn it up, so we'll hear you just fine.
Okay. Most of the work will actually be done during the day. There are times when the road will have to be shut down completely, and that is what we're going to try to do at night so it doesn't disturb the traffic. That'll be minimized to 10 hours at a time, and it'll be sporadic through the project. It won't be for any large, you know, like weeks at a time.
But while we have you up here, the soldier piles, as they're being installed, can you describe that? Are they pounded in with some sort of a pounding device? And I'm imagining myself being a neighbor there. I'm curious.
Actually, and I'd like to piggyback on Commissioner Meyer's question. Is this similar to the work that Caltrans did on Highway 41 west of between Atascadero and Morro Bay a few years ago, where there are large reinforcing, looks like the same sort of thing. Are you familiar with that?
No, I'm not familiar with that.
Never mind.
But I will say that the picture that was shown as an example of what the wall will look like is the wall that was done at Danny Creek, and this is very similar to that.
Okay.
The holes will be drilled. They will not be. It will not be pounding.
Okay.
So it will be drilled, and then the piles will be installed, and the noise level should be fairly in comparison to the pounding, it will be minimal in that sense.
So if you live next door, you're going to be able to sleep.
I hope so, yeah. The idea is that if there is some concern in that, that has been addressed in the environmental document, and we will take, I'll let her address it, but I think we had accommodated that in the environmental document.
Hey, can I ask you, while you're still up there, what I'll call the sheeting between the pilings, how far does that go down? Because it says the entire wall's, I think, 50 feet tall. I'm assuming the pilings are 50 feet. How far does the sheeting go down?
Piles are, I can't tell you the exact length. They're longer than 50 feet. It's the sheeting that goes down 50 feet.
Does that require excavation 50 feet deep to install those?
The piles are drilled, right. So there's no excavation associated with the piles themselves. The excavation is with the lagging, as I think is what you're referring to as the sheeting, and that will need to be excavated in front of the wall in order to install those. The wall at the south end is 50 feet deep, and as you go north, it gets a little bit less in height. So by the time you get to the north end, it's only 30 feet.
Thanks. All right. Any more questions for either the Caltrans individuals? And the
Regarding the noise, we are concerned about the resident who's there. Normally, on a normal project, normal landscaping, flat, we would put up some sort of buffer, but the landscaping isn't going to allow that. So it could be we'll have to relocate him. It also could be that the topography will block a lot of the noise because there is sort of a bulb out in the hillside there. So we're going to have to work with that gentleman and see what's going to work best for him.
This is just north of Ragged Point, right?
Just north of the Ragged Point Inn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So does that have any bearing on coordination of the project with activity there?
How do you mean?
Openings and closings.
For access to the inn?
Yeah, because you're so close. It's the equipment is parked right there just north of the inn area, and they have a restaurant and everything.
Right. I don't think it'll be affecting the inn. It's not – you can't see the two. The topography gets in the way. So and there won't be any complete road closures in the evening.
Is that correct, Susan? No. I mean, sorry, during the day, no complete road closures.
So visitors to the inn will be able to get through.
At the right time.
As long as it's not that particular evening. But there will be media announcements. There'll be signs noting that the road will be closed.
Okay. No other questions? I'll go ahead and open public comment. Again, anybody wishing to speak, please fill out a speaker slip. State your name when you come to the podium. At this point, I don't have any speaker slips. Comes one.
Mary Webb, yes, and I'm on the North Coast Advisory Land Use Committee. So I think Megan did and Caltrans did a really, good job with this project. Except the EIR itself, I had an issue with in the fact that. I guess I have questions. If this is a geologically unstable area that is obviously a landslide site, because that's why we're fixing the road, because there was a landslide there, why is the only no impact checked on the EIR? So I have these kind of questions with EIRs in general, but here's a project which it would seem to me that's my question. I shouldn't presume what the answer is, but if it's a landslide area, why isn't that the highest level checked on an EIR, potentially significant impact when you're working on an area like that? And then what does that change later as far as mitigation goes? If you check just no impact, does that mean there's a lot less mitigation for a project like this than if they would have checked the potentially significant impact? So that's one question I had, and I do know the people that live right above there, and they are really hoping that when it gets really loud and really noisy at night with really huge lights and stuff, that they could be relocated. And I know that was part of the EIR, and I think the Caltrans people, even Paula said that when we met. Then the only other concern is obviously the visualization of those railings. This is a scenic highway, and you want to make sure that anybody driving up and down Highway 1 can see the ocean and not just railings right there. Thank you.
Steve McMaster's planning staff. Just a couple things on the environmental document. The environmental document in this case was prepared by Caltrans as the lead agency, so the county is using the Caltrans prepared document. Sometimes with the checklist, different lead agencies have a different way of approaching when there's insignificant impacts or an impact that can be mitigated. So I'm not going to justify kind of how Caltrans filled out the boxes. We would have arrived hopefully at the same place, but maybe had a different checkbox. In this case, I think really what it's looking at is whether or not the project would in it itself have impacts to geologically unstable area. This is a project to actually stabilize a portion of the road crossing a geologically unstable area, and they found that it wouldn't necessarily kick off, for instance, a bigger landslide. That would be the impact that would have been addressed by that. So that's why I believe they had a finding of no impact. It's not going, the project itself is not going to destabilize and cause a further landslide, but in fact is actually stabilizing the result of an existing condition. And then in regards to the noise, there is a condition that requires Caltrans to coordinate with the neighboring property owner and to relocate if necessary to accommodate the nighttime work. So it's a balancing act between impacts to traffic during the tourist season, where there's probably going to be most traffic, versus the impacts to the one individual. So Caltrans appropriately identified relocation as a possible way, along with coordinating. And then lastly, on the bridge railing design that Megan included, and she had a picture of it specifically because, believe it or not, the railing type along Highway 1 has been the subject of years of discussion between Coastal Commission, Caltrans, and the local jurisdictions, and this is the railing that has been agreed upon as the kind of the standard for Highway 1 projects. It still allows some, if you notice, it still allowed some views through the railing. It wasn't a solid, for instance, barrier, and it specifically is to allow the viewing public to be able to actually still see the ocean, even though you've got these areas where you need the guardrail.
Mr. Irving?
Steve, thank you for that further explanation. Actually kind of ties into a question I had, which was, is the Coastal Commission a roadblock in this kind of repair, or given the long history of continued repairs on Highway 1, this proposal here has probably been well vetted, I would expect, and likely to not receive any opposition. That was the first question. Second question, though, had to do with, on that environmental document, is there any significance to the fact that on 1-63 at the bottom it's talking about exposing people to significant risk of loss, injury, death, et cetera, and the explanation speaks of a wooden wall moderately susceptible to wildland fires. It kind of reads like Caltrans probably pulled this out of a previous document. Does that impact the validity of this document? And should that not be corrected to read, you know, it's a metal wall with metal pilings and all of that? I don't know whether that makes any difference or not, but I'm...
Well, I'll address the second one first, and that is, it sounds like there's been a bit of a project change from what was originally evaluated in the negative declaration. I mean, that's identifying that as part of that design, there was a wood component that could be subject to wildland fire. The change to using a metal would actually lessen that impact.
Sure.
Typically, you can go having less impacts than what was identified. You just can't go the other direction
right.
when you're using an environmental document. So I don't think that's a concern. It's actually probably less of an impact
okay.
than what was identified when the negative declaration was prepared, which I think was 2013 or
yeah.
2012. And then the first part was regarding whether Caltrans may have a different opinion of whether the Coastal Commission is a speed bump on repairing Highway 1. They obviously, the larger portion of Highway 1, Southern Highway 1, is in Monterey County, So Caltrans has a lot more experience in dealing with the Highway 1 repairs. Typically, the ones that have been done in the county of San Luis Obispo, have followed really the standards that have been agreed for the repair and stabilization that's done during the entire Big Sur coast. And I don't believe we've ever had an appeal from Coastal Commission on those, since they're pretty much following the standard that's been agreed upon.
Thank you.
I'd like to just comment. I think it's reasonable to say that Highway 1 is a permanent work in progress, and in that it's constantly moving and various parts of it. And so what projects like this do is to reduce the return period. Lengthen the return period so that this won't happen again here for hopefully some fraction of geologic time, but it would be longer than past slides here. And short of boring a tunnel like they did up at the north end, which is a very expensive proposition, these are the kinds of projects that can be expected. In that sense, I believe that the two agencies have in common the protection of coastal access for not only Californians but also millions of people, visitors from around the world, and it's California's commitment to coastal access in the broadest sense to have projects like this.
At this point, let me close public comment.
Sure.
Get that taken care of,
sure.
And then bring it back to the commission. Are there any other questions of staff or other issues you want to bring up? It sounds like Commissioner Topping's ready to proceed with the motion.
I am.
I closed public comment, yeah.
I do have some comments.
Yeah, no, I brought it back to commission. Yeah, go ahead and jump in.
My question is probably again for Caltrans, and I'm specifically, maybe I'm overworking this, but I'm specifically interested in page 1-32 and the neighbor who is affected and who may be temporarily relocated, and I just want to make sure that temporary relocation is acceptable to that neighbor and not just putting him in a Motel 6 in Guadalupe or something. He's got to be.
He may want to be there.
I just don't know how that works, and so I was hoping to hear something about how that relocation works and how that arrangement is made.
Did we hear back from Caltrans? There are no hotels in Guadalupe, unfortunately, but they're
working
on
it. I'm just kidding. But
commission meeting.
It needs to be somewhere nearby and acceptable.
Well, to be perfectly honest, I'm not sure how it works either. I was kind of expecting more dialogue during our permitting process, during our application process. But, I'm anticipating the Ragged Point Inn. That's the closest location. There really isn't anything else nearby. So,
is it possible for us to add in something like acceptable to the resident? Because the way it stands now, it just says we're going to relocate them somewhere. It doesn't say anything. And
I don't think we need to get involved with that.
That gets a little tricky. I mean, what's acceptable is
exactly
subjective.
We can't make up our mind what's acceptable for him.
Well, you guys said the Ragged Point Inn, so it's on the record. There we go. I still live with that.
And I would like to clarify, it is a wooden wall. Those sheeting pieces are wooden. It's the metal piers. So in between is wood.
Commissioner Meyer, just in the past, we have dealt with relocations in the past on another project. I know during the Avila cleanup, that was a big point. And the way it worked at that point was that it was a combination of notification and when the noisiest, most disruptive work would be done, they essentially would notify the resident and then give them the option. And some will not. Some maybe just want to use really good earplugs, or they're not going to be there during that period anyway. So in the past, that's how it's worked. It's given as an option. It's not a forced relocation. It's a this is when the most noisy work is going to occur during the span of these days. Your option, we will relocate you to and usually it's nearby. That's usually part of the protocol. We don't specifically say that in the condition, but I think it would be implied.
Thank you.
Any other commissioners with questions or comments at this point? Commissioner Topping.
Okay. I'd like to make a motion that we consider and rely on the previously approved mitigated negative declaration adopted on June 19th, 2013. Prepared by the California Department of Transportation acting as lead agency and approve minor use permit and Coastal Development Permit DRC 2013-00052 based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and the conditions listed in Exhibit B.
It would be Exhibit A as amended?
As amended.
Second.
Can I clarify that the motion, I believe I understand why the recommended action in the staff report does not actually mention the variance, but I'm assuming that the motion includes a
motion includes adoption for the variance findings as presented by staff.
Thank you.
Sound good? Oh, is there a second?
Yes.
Eric.
The roll call, please.
Commissioner Topping?
Yes.
Commissioner Meyer?
Yes.
Commissioner Campbell?
Yes.
Commissioner Irving?
Yes.
And Chairperson Murphy?
Yes.
All right. I'd like to thank staff for giving us a full-size set of plans on this one today.
Yeah.
This is a ridiculously complicated set of plans.
Can you read
yes.
All right. Well, see the head here. Nicole, would you introduce item number two, please?
Study session to discuss the Highway 1 realignment.
Nancy yes.
Morton.
Good morning, commissioners. I will introduce this item, and then our colleagues from Caltrans and State Parks will be presenting a PowerPoint for you. This is a study session to discuss the Highway 1 realignment project and the California Coastal Trail in the North Coast portion of the county. It is being presented and is being processed in the context of what we call a consolidated permit process, again, which is undertaken by the county, the Coastal Commission, and the applicant, who is Caltrans in this case. For the Coastal Act, in recent history, probably the last 7 or 8 or 9 years, has allowed a consolidated process to occur, which is when an applicant or a project needs permits from both the Coastal Commission and the county on a case-by-case basis. It can be decided between the three parties involved, the county, the Coastal Commission, and the applicant, that it would make better sense for the Coastal Commission to process the one permit so that the applicant doesn't have to go through both the county and the Coastal Commission. And the one caveat to doing that is that public participation cannot be impaired. And so basically this study session is what we proposed and what the Coastal Commission accepted as a good way to allow local participation and local comments to be made on this project without people. And then we would submit those comments to the Coastal Commission so that someone didn't feel like they had to travel somewhere else in California to comment on the project. We've done a handful of consolidated permits in the last couple of years. And they each one handles the public participation requirement differently. For example, the Cayucas Pier, the repairs that are being done on that, Coastal and the county talked and decided that, you know, it would make better sense, and that that had some real timing issues for the Coastal Commission to process that. And the way that we address public participation is that the public is well aware and totally supportive of the Cayucas Pier getting fixed, and that General Services, who's in charge of that project, would report monthly to the Cayucas Advisory Council. So that was how we handled public participation in that instance. Another project which is being processed by the Coastal Commission instead of the county is the Oceano Dunes Dust Mitigation Program. And that hasn't That hasn't had a public part yet because the application isn't there yet. But when it does, there will be some sort of a workshop or hearing in front of the Air Pollution Control District and or the Board of Supervisors. That's the way that that process is probably going to work. There are we've had a couple of small instances, a Caltrans stockpile permit up in the same area as these projects, and a public works drainage project in Cayucas where they were small projects and just reporting out to the advisory group was considered adequate. So that's the way that the consolidated process works, and that's why we're here. So I anticipate at the end of the coastal staff had hoped to be able to attend this meeting, but they were unable to, so they gave us a letter, which I thought nicely explained their expectations, which we distributed to you yesterday. They are hoping to receive any comments that the county might have through this particular hearing, through this particular study session today. In terms of public notice, the county has an interested parties list, and both Caltrans and State Parks also have noticing lists, and so about 200 notices went out from all three of the jurisdictions. And it was also announced, Caltrans also went several times to the North Coast Advisory Council during this process. So I think that at this point I will turn it over to our colleagues. Cecilia Boudreau from Caltrans will be making her presentation, and then Nick Franco is here from State Parks, and he'll be talking about the Coastal Trail. So go ahead, Cecilia.
All right.
There's the PowerPoint.
Your mic's not in.
Oh, thank you. I'd like to just thank you for providing the opportunity to present here at the Planning Commission meeting. My name is Cecilia Boudreau. I brought with me some colleagues, Paul Martinez and Jennifer Moongen and Kyle Birch. Jennifer Moongen is the project biologist. Paul Martinez is the project manager, and Kyle Birch is the design engineer. So if after the presentation there's specific questions that I'm unable to answer, I'll ask for their help. I included this slide in the presentation because I think it pretty much represents why the project is needed. Many of you might have seen waves crashing over Highway 1. This is just north of the Piedras Blancas Motel. And you can see the temporary rock slope protection in front of the highway. That's what's been protecting the highway for about the last 17 years, and the K-rail there. And I'm not... Oh, thank you. The project is located in northern San Luis Obispo County on Highway 1. The realignment will begin just north of the Piedras Blancas Lighthouse driveway and end just south of Arroyo de la Cruz Creek. So we'll be realigning approximately 2.8 miles of highway inland. The purpose of the project is to prevent bluff erosion from adversely affecting the future operation of the highway for the next 100 years. And this area of the coast is eroding very rapidly. In some locations, up to 4 feet per year have been recorded. The project will include 12-foot travel lanes, construction of 8-foot paved shoulders without chip seal, 3 bridges that will replace the culverts that exist now crossing the drainages, removal of the existing rock slope protection and the K-rail that you saw on slide number 1, where the waves were crashing over the highway, and removal and restoration of the existing roadway. Because the goal of the project is to prevent bluff erosion from affecting the future operation of the highway for the next 100 years, the first step in determining various alignment alternatives was to determine where the shoreline would be in 100 years. And that's depicted by the red line on the map here. While developing alternative alignments, it was critical to develop an alignment that would have the least amount of environmental impacts and remain east of that red line and west of the yellow line, which is the 500-foot roadway easement boundary. This area of California is very rich in biological and cultural resources. And these were the primary resources of concern when we were developing our proposed alignment. Each alignment alternative, I think there was about 17 of them, were mapped and overlaid onto environmentally sensitive area mapping that identified all the cultural resources and all the sensitive biological resources. And this was done in order to determine the extent of impacts of each of the various alignments so that we could pick an alignment that had the least amount of impact. And so through this process, Caltrans was able to develop an alignment that avoided cultural resources. Biological resources, impacts to biological resources was unavoidable. Two of the most sensitive habitats in the area are coastal prairie, which is shown in the lower right-hand corner of this slide. Coastal prairie is the most abundant plant community within the project footprint. It pretty much makes up the entire coastal bluff out there. So avoiding impacting coastal prairie was not possible. Coastal prairie is a native perennial bunch grass plant community. It's made of diverse plant species, some of them quite rare. And impacts to wetlands were unavoidable as well. The road runs in a north-south direction, and the drainages run in an east-west direction, so crossing wetlands was necessary. We incorporated a lot of minimization measures in the design and construction components of the project. The bridges were designed to span the creek channels. No support piers will be placed inside the main creek channels. In areas where the alignment transects seasonal wetlands, the roadway will be built on top of a rock subbase, which is permeable. So water will be able to travel from the east side of the highway to the west side of the highway. We didn't want to impound water and dry up the wetlands on the west side of the highway. During construction, preservation of topsoil along the area where the new alignment will be constructed was a major component of our restoration efforts. The topsoil is extremely valuable because it has a lot of native seed bank from the coastal prairie and the coastal prairie wetlands, and we didn't want to lose the opportunity to use that soil later on for restoration of the existing alignment. So during excavation of the new alignment, the contractor will be collecting the top 6 inches of topsoil and storing that for use on the restoration of where the existing highway is today. The two bridges, two of the three bridges, will be constructed from platforms, from a trestle, and this will limit the amount of construction equipment needed inside the creek channel. So basically, when the trestles are constructed, there'll be no need to for equipment in the creek channel. So this will really reduce impacts to the creeks. ESA fencing will be placed to prevent unnecessary temporary impacts. Work windows will be in place. There will be no work allowed in any of the drainages during the dry season because there's so many sensitive species up there, red-legged frog, tidewater goby, southwestern pond turtle, steelhead, about everything. And we will have a full-time biological construction monitor on site to make sure that all these specifications are followed, all the environmental commitments are met, and as well as all the commitments in the permits. The project will have an overall benefit to wildlife following the completion of construction.
Aquatic habitat will be improved through the removal of the existing culverts, which have created barriers, and the creeks will be restored in these locations. And habitat connectivity will be improved through bridging the drainages with bridges. Water pollution will be also be benefited in the marine environment and the creek environment, just basically from moving the highway 400 to 500 feet east of where it exists now. So that'll leave a large area of vegetation to act as a filter for pollutants coming off the highway before surface flow and subsurface flow gets to the marine environment. Also, the bridges were designed to convey water to vegetated swales on either end of the bridge rather than draining directly into the creeks. The biological resources will be mitigated on site and off site. And as I've mentioned, on site mitigation will occur through restoration of the majority of the existing alignment, except for areas where State Parks has requested the alignment to remain, and that's in front of the old Piedras Blancas Motel. So on-site mitigation will involve removal of the existing roadbed, all the asphalt, all the road base will come out. All the cut and fill areas will be regraded to match the existing topography. And once the existing roadbed is removed and graded, the topsoil that we collect that I talked about from the coastal prairie and the wetlands on the new alignment will be placed on the disturbed soil areas, and that area will be restored back to wetland and coastal prairie. Off-site mitigation will occur north of the project, just north of Arroyo de la Cruz Creek. There's this big floodplain up there, and some of you may know where this is. It used to... It was farmed, had pea fields, and I think maybe some tomatoes, and along, and even prior to that, it was a dairy farm, I think, during the Hearst operation. It's now owned by State Parks, no longer being farmed. And the northern end of the project, let me see if I can use, there we go. This area is pretty high quality, high functioning wetlands, but as you move south, we start to get a lot of invasive plants, and it's kind of shown in this map here. This is all pretty high-quality wetlands. The pink areas are kind of marginal wetlands. And so Caltran has hired a consulting firm who specializes in wetland restoration, and we've been working with them and with State Parks to come up with a design to expand the wetlands further south and restore the site. So components of that involve developing an extensive weed eradication program because it's very, very weedy out there. And in the long run, the area will be restored back to wetland, coastal prairie, and coastal scrub. And both of the on and off-site mitigation will require at least 5-year mitigation and monitoring just to ensure success and ensure that the sites are sustainable. This is a visual simulation of the new alignment. The aesthetic goal of the project was to preserve views of the coastline and the ridgeline and maintain the existing rural character of the North Coast. Minimization measures to achieve this include open style bridge railing, landform grading, which I'll talk about in a little bit, removal of the old roadbed, which I'd already discussed, and undergrounding utilities in the area. This is a visual simulation of the bridge crossing Arroyo del Corral Creek and the bridge rail that is proposed. It's an open style metal bridge rail. It's 42 inches tall. It's the lowest bridge rail we could approve and still maintain our safety standards. And this is a visual simulation of what the bridge will look like. The architectural elements incorporated to reduce visual impacts include lowest bridge height design as possible as to not draw attention away from the landscape and to these structures. Again, they were designed to look simple, again, not to draw people's attention away from the landscape and to the structures. But we did want to include some themed elements that help reflect the area. So we included a foothill-themed ornamentation here on the bike rail. And the circular columns and the little bent cap on top and the little round lens was derived from lighthouse elements, so like the lighthouse lens and the column. This is an example of landform grading. Landform grading is an innovative design used to mimic the natural contours of the landscape. And this slide shows traditional grading in the lower left-hand corner, where you can see a pretty stark difference between the cut and the natural hillside. And the upper right-hand photo shows that this difference is not there. So the landform grading, just almost you can't really even tell that the area has been cut. And this is the method of grading that we're using right now on the Highway 46 Corridor Improvement Project. There are not just visual benefits of this grading style. This grading stabilizes slopes from erosion because we don't have the steep cut slopes, and helps promote revegetation. It reduces maintenance. Cultural resources. There's pretty rich cultural resources in the area. I had indicated earlier that the project alignment will not impact any significant cultural resources, but to further protect these resources, an archaeological monitor will be out on site during construction in case there's any unanticipated resources that are found during excavation. And we will also be placing ESA fencing to restrict construction work in the work zone. We are currently in the process of obtaining several permits, Fish and Wildlife permit, U.S. Army Corps permit, and water quality control permits are still pending. The Coast Development permit is still pending. And Caltrans has been working cooperatively with the California Coastal Commission and the county and with state parks and giving them the submittals they need, giving the Coastal Commission the submittals they need to approve the project. So the project will have an overall benefit to public access. Once the highway is realigned inland, all of the land west of the highway that is now currently in private ownership will be transferred to state parks and become open space recreation area, and that's probably about 75 acres. And this will be the area that will facilitate development of the California Coast Trail. The project will maintain informal pullouts. It will maintain the turnstiles that exist today, similar to what you see here on the bottom slide. It will construct driveway access to the Piedras Blancas Motel. And Caltrans and State Parks are continuing to work together to help facilitate the development of the California Coast Trail and parking access to the trailhead. So from there, I'm going to pass it on to Nick Franco.
Quick chairs. So the California Coastal Trail, that means a lot of things to a lot of different people. So I thought I would read what the definition is based on the planning documents that have preceded all of this. It's a continuous public right-of-way along the California coastline, a trail designed to foster appreciation and stewardship of the scenic and natural resources of the coast through hiking and other complementary modes of non-motorized transportation. So it's really the vision is to have a continuous trail that goes from the Oregon border down to the Mexican border that goes along the entire California coastline. A lot of people say, is it just the beach? Yeah, it is the beach. It's a braided trail concept. So, yes, walking on the beach is part of the trail. Walking on existing footpaths is part of the trail. But having a designated, maintainable, fully accessible, multi-purpose trail surface is really the goal, ultimately, so that there is one designated pathway that can be used by multiple users. It's built in segments. There's no grand vision to, you know, start at one end of California and go to the other end. That would be a little unrealistic. So it really is taking advantage of opportunities to do segments throughout the coast, and it encompasses different surfaces. So you can see here there's paved portions of the coastal trail, very developed, and there's extremely undeveloped portions of the coastal trail, which are just kind of meandering pathways. Here locally, we have the Moonstone Beach Boardwalk. That's part of the California Coastal Trail, so it's formally designated as the Coastal Trail. But that doesn't mean you can't walk on the beach and be on the Coastal Trail. You're still part of the California coast. For this project that's coming up, it's going to be a mix of surfaces, a mix of elements. So there are going to be bridges. There's going to be boardwalks. There's going to be compacted road base. It's a class 2 road base, so it's similar to what's used at the elephant seal viewing area. So if you look at the bottom slide here, that's the elephant seal walkway. There's the gravel portion is class 2 road base that's compacted, and then that meets up with a boardwalk, and it's kind of that sort of design is really what's likely. The bridges are more in line with the upper slide that's there. For when we need to cross areas. There's plenty of other types of coastal trails up and down California, from just very informal DG paths to old abandoned roadways. But in terms of the actual location, it's obviously contiguous with the road alignment project. And to the south, the closest completed portion of the coastal trail is the Elephant Seal Boardwalk that goes up to the northern vista point there. So there will be a gap between that completed segment and this proposed segment. That gap, it crosses the Piedras Blancas Outstanding Natural Area, which is BLM managing the lighthouse, and then we co-manage that whole outstanding natural area. And there is another project that's underway to complete that segment. So whether that one happens before this one, we don't really know. That's going to be a timing issue. But ultimately, you'll have 6 miles of formally designated coastal trail in this area. So I'm trying to connect all of those segments together. That's really the end goal. So I'll kind of walk you through these. On the southern end, there's currently a surfer access parking area that will remain. There's going to have to be lateral access from the new highway alignment. Just a quick word on the lines, because the lines get confusing. There's a lot of lines there. The black line is the existing highway. The yellow line is the new alignment. The green line is the proposed trail alignment. And the blue lines are the existing trails. So the existing trails would remain. The new green line is the actual developed coastal trail. And then you can see where the highway will be on the yellow line. The black line will go away, essentially. So the southern parking area would remain. It's about 15 to 20 cars is about what fits there. And that wouldn't change. So that would continue to be there and would provide an access. The trail follows essentially the topography there, crosses the wetland areas using a boardwalk, and then at the very top uses a bridge because that's a more difficult to cross drainage. And you can see that it still provides that connectivity using existing trails to get down to the beach itself for those who want to go down to the beach. As we move north, we continue up, boardwalk, bridge, and then you get to the motel property, the Piedras Blancas Motel property, which Separate from this, we're working to bring up to code so that it can be put out to a concession and be back in operation. So the trail would take advantage of the existing trail that's out there, that blue line, and would improve it to match the surface and reconnect just north of the motel. You see a gap in the green line? That's waiting for the resolution with the private property owners there. So we don't want to design until that's done. But somehow or another, there will be some level of connectivity between those two ends of the green line. Then heading north, you cross another bridge across the large drainage there, and the final bridge is up towards the top. Just recognizing coastal erosion and the retreat, we're going to leave that blue line, which is the current informal pathway that's along the bluff's edge, and connect in with that green line that follows up a little higher, so a little nicer view of the ocean. You got a little elevation so you can look down on the ocean. But people want to walk right next to the ocean as well, so we would keep both of those, and that way we have a nice sustainable trail that we can maintain for a long period of time while the bluff top one slowly erodes back over 10, 15, 20, 50 years, whatever it is. The northern parking area, which currently exists next to an access stile, would remain. So that'd provide that public access. In terms of planning, there's been a lot of prior planning to this that you all probably are aware of. Back in 2003, the State Coastal Conservancy developed Completing the Coastal Trail, which was a plan for the entire trail, which encourages a continuous trail, cooperative efforts between all the agencies, a trail that's respectful of private property rights and links to other trails. There was the SLOCOG completed Northern San Luis Obispo County Coastal Trail Master Plan, which included this segment of the trail in it, so this alignment is in that plan. We held a series of public workshops in 2005 with the Hearst Ranch Conservation Deal, which added the properties over to state parks. And then as this project is completed, then that gap property between where state parks property currently is and where the new highway alignment will be will come over to state parks and be part of Hearst San Simeon State Park. During that public comment, it was clear that people, that, you know, one of the main goals of the acquisition was to complete the coastal trail, so that's clearly articulated in there. People really wanted to protect the view sheds and use existing trails as much as possible, keep signage to a minimum, and keep all of the surfaces looking in natural-looking material. So that's part of that design that we're working on. And I think that's pretty much it. We want to keep that beautiful part of the coastline looking like that beautiful part of the coastline, allow visitors to have access to view elephant seals, to hike along the coastal trail, to access the beach areas, to protect the wetlands that are up there, to protect the elephant seals that are up there, and just enjoy this part of the park. So that's pretty much where we are. Any questions?
All right, thank you very much. Before we go to questions, we are going to have a public comment section, and I see a number of people here. If you wish to speak, fill out your speaker slip. They're available in the back and turn them in at the podium. So I don't know how many speakers. If we're going to have a number of speakers, I'd like to have them in advance so we can call people up to the podium as opposed to people just coming up on their own. So if you do want to speak, go ahead and turn a speaker slip in now while we're doing questions, and then we'll go to public comment. Commissioner, questions? Commissioner Irving.
Now, I had a quick question regarding the exhibit. We got something that was 2.4, and the orange line on this, is that the same as your new highway alignment? Does this look familiar to you? Here. How good is your eyesight? Because when you were doing your presentation, you were showing a yellow line that was the 500-foot easement, and then as you were doing your presentation, the yellow line is suddenly the road. So on this, is this the new road idea? Okay, thank you. That I was trying to keep it all straight.
Yeah, we didn't do our color coordination.
Yeah,
right.
I'm sorry. Sorry about that. I'm easily confused.
I have a quick question regarding the financing. It's a pretty expensive project. I mean, are you go with the financing on it? Has it been allocated through the budget? And has the right-of-ways all been obtained? Or what kind of stumbling blocks are in front of you?
For the Caltrans?
Yes.
Microphone.
Yes, for the whole project, yeah.
The highway realignment is fully funded through construction, so all of the right-of-way that is needed for the new highway is funded and obtained.
Thank you.
And I have a question for you. The existing right-of-way, this 500-foot wide easement, effectively, and the roadway that's on our map here is at the very eastern edge of that right-of-way. Is that what determined where that Highway 1 went there?
Let me see if I can understand your
question. Effectively, it looks as though Highway 1 is running right through the front yard of a house here, and I presume that's the edge of an easement. Or is that was that a negotiated? How did the highway get to that exact location?
Let me get to that slide. Yeah. All right. We'll go back and forth here. We have a 500-foot roadway easement through coordination with the Hearst Corporation. So all the land between the new alignment and the yellow line, I'm not very good at that. All the way back, okay. So the land between the new alignment and the yellow line is easement land that was provided for us to move the highway east. And the new alignment, I think, is on a 100-foot easement. So we'll have two 12-foot lanes, 8-foot shoulders, and whatever else outside of that.
I guess what I'm getting at, there used to be a locally famous sculptor that lived here, and his house was on a parcel that was on the west side of the highway.
Peter Fell, yeah.
And if for anybody who's lived here a long time, there was a famous gate there. It was a giant bra.
Right.
Unlatched the bra, and that was the entrance to his property. As a child, that was a very fun thing to see every day. His property went away over the course of about 40 years, and it's probably a 100-plus deep number of piece of property.
Yeah.
And so if we're relocating the highway, let's say 300 feet, east of the ocean, that's really only 150 years of erosion. And so my question basically says, so we're establishing this new route, we're spending an enormous amount of money to build this route in this location, and it's only going to last us 150 years. And it seems like we're establishing it because we don't want to get into a discussion any further with the landowner to the east, the Hearst Corporation, but it looks to me as though within the next 200 years we're going to be spending another several $100 million to move the highway a little bit further east.
So your question is, why not just design a highway?
Yeah, why aren't we doing that now?
Years rather than 100.
Seems like
I'm
going
to pass that over to Paul Martinez, the project manager, to help.
Can we possibly get into this after we take a short break?
Yeah, because we do need to get our break.
Because I have about a dozen questions. Some of them were related to this and details. Plus, there's a lot of people here that want to talk.
That's kind of what I'm going to get to. I think we probably ought to go to public comment fairly soon and get that on the table. Then we'll come back with questions and then finish our discussion.
Okay.
So let's go. We're right at 10:30. Let's go ahead and take our break and come back at 10:45. Call our meeting back to order, meeting the Planning Commission. At this point, I'm going to go ahead and open public comment. Again, if you wish to speak, please fill out a speaker slip. They're on the wall in the back. Turn it in here up front, and then you'll have 3 minutes. When you come up, please state your name, and the commission also prefer if you'd also your residence or your involvement in the project. First speaker slip is David Cooper.
Yes, thank you. My name is David Cooper. I'm the current chair of the Piedras Blancas Light Station Association. The association, thank you for the opportunity to comment on this proposal, which we support. I do have some concerns. The association supports and facilitates and coordinates guided public tours to the light station that we caravan from the Piedras Blancas Motel. And some of my concerns are, given the fact that year over year, month over month, we're seeing heavier demand for those tours. And I'm concerned about the safety issues with respect to the realignment, its impact on bringing traffic out of Piedras Blancas Motel. At our peak periods, we operate, we run as many as a caravan down to the to our site at the light station. We caravan sometimes two, maybe three caravans of 10 to 15 vehicles at a time. So we are now going to be putting out onto Highway 1, exiting onto a new realignment from the motel, presumably. We're going to be exiting, we're going to be gaining entrance onto Highway 1 with this new alignment during our entrance periods for the public tours at 10 o'clock in the morning, upwards of 45 automobiles. And then we're going to be exiting. We're going to be exiting that number of automobiles on back into the light station for guided tours. My questions have to do with the impact of what's going to happen with average traffic speeds coming south off of given the new realignment. Any of you who have traveled south from Big Sur recognize that there's a I would call it kind of a pent up demand for speed. We're going to be. This realignment will be creating new straightaways along there. Has it? My concern is with how much increase of that average speed will impact safety issues as we bring guests into the Piedras Blancas the light station for these tours. And if there's been any concern, or should there be any concern for any mitigation of that, of those increased traffic speeds, strictly a safety issue, in addition to my concerns about greater numbers of the public gaining access to the light station for guided tours. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. And Ms. Orton, are you keeping track of the comments then? Because part of our goal here today is to forward comments on to the Coastal Commission, or somebody in staff is.
I'm sorry, between the two of us, yes, we're keeping track.
Because I'm anticipating that'll be the direction at the end, is to put together probably a letter, not minutes, and highlighting the comments from the public. Okay, mm-hmm. Thank you. Next speaker, Mary Webb.
Mary Webb, Cambria resident. I'm also vice president of Green Space, and I think I actually can speak from them. This is a really good project. I appreciate the way the mitigations for the wetlands have been put together here, and just working together with state parks, with Caltrans, really taking into consideration the biological resources of this area. We totally need to do that. This is a really incredibly rich environmentally sensitive area. And just the way that the bridges are spanning the wetlands, I think that's all good, the aesthetics. Obviously, the road has to be moved inland. I mean, the water is totally inundating there in areas right next to the motel. The restoration of Arroyo de la Cruz also, that is just an incredibly rich, beautiful estuary there, and it really does need to be done. I am really concerned about all the wildlife that's there and just the impacts of the project in general. I mean, there's even tule elk out there and just all kinds of wildlife in that area. So they totally need to be very careful about all the work that's going to happen out there. I agree with the speaker that just talked about the traffic, too, and the increase of traffic once that highway starts to get more straight. There, we do get a lot more people that want to start speeding when they get out right out of Ragged Point. I am concerned about the issues that will come up with increased public access to this area. And, you know, it's great. Public access is great. But it kind of scares me when I see just how
much of this coastal trail is going to allow more public access. It can create just a lot of issues, people bringing their pets out there, and they're off leash, you feces and things, you know, all it's just, and these are now marine protected areas. So I would also appreciate, you know, when we talk about these areas, that we outline where the new marine protected areas are in addition to the marine sanctuaries. So on the maps, people can start to see that there are protections in the ocean more than just the Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary. The coastal trail map that Director Franco or Superintendent Franco, I would like to see that online somewhere. I guess I really wasn't really aware of the fact that the coastal trail is going to impact the beach area even more than the highway realignment, or as much as the highway realignment. The Highway 1 realignment then has to put all these bridges and everything to expand span the wetlands. So the coastal trail to span the wetlands, it sounds like there are a lot of footings and bridges and things that are going to have to go into those wetland areas, which to me causes cumulative impacts to the Highway 1 realignment project that I really wasn't aware of before. So I want to actually take more care of looking at how this coastal trail is going to be designed. And archaeological resources, was that taken into consideration in the EIR with both the coastal trail and the Highway 1 realignment, or is that EIR really looking more at the Highway 1 realignment and not so much the coastal trail? I'm concerned about the coordination now of the two projects between the Highway 1 realignment and the Elephant Slide Trunk project. Are these projects going to be happening in conjunction with each other? Are they being coordinated? Is the highway going to be closed at the same time for both projects? Are they happening in different years? Or what's the timing of these two projects? And how much material is going to be being hauled up and down Highway 1 for both, either or both projects? That's a lot of materials being hauled in front of Cambria and San Simeon. That could be huge cumulative impacts. The Marine Protection, Rather Cruz Underground, and undergrounding utilities. I thought that's really great. I really want to see every time we do a project on Highway 1, we absolutely get these utilities undergrounded. I think that's it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Next speaker, Jim Webb.
Good morning. My name is Jim Webb, and a couple of issues I just thought I'd mention. One was the issue of the marine protected area, the Point Piedras Blancas State Marine Reserve, and it came to mind when they were talking about removing the riprap and emergency barricades just above the Piedras Blancas Motel. And I think really there's permitting issues regarding taking anything out of a state marine reserve. Access is a wonderful thing, but access also causes some environmental degradation sometimes. And I was interested about what kind of controls there would be on the access and use of that trail. For example, I assume no one's going to be camping in that area. There'll be no campsites or anything. And most of the biological activity that I've seen up there occurs usually in the evening or early morning or through the middle of the night. And I just wonder whether the area would be restricted to day use only and not allow people to access it during the nighttime hours. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, I have Brant Kehoe.
Brant Kehoe, president of Friends of the Elephant Seal. The discussion about the highway speed problem that the light station is concerned about concerns us as well. The pulling in and out of the parking lot there at the Elephant Seals is a bit tricky even now. If highway speeds increase, it could be made more dangerous. The viewpoint 4, which is the parking area just north of the main viewing areas, has even less view of oncoming traffic from the north because of the hill there. And so any efforts that can be made to keep the traffic speed within reason would be very, very helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. That's the last speaker slip I have. If nobody else is coming forward, I'll go ahead and close public comment and bring it back, I guess. Well, do you all want to address questions brought up during public comment? I don't know if you kept track of them all.
I can certainly do
that. It's not a regular staff, or we could.
Yeah, I mean, I can address the questions on the trail portion. So as it relates to the Piedras Blancas Motel and parking area, one of the things we asked Caltrans to do is retain the highway, the existing highway in that area, immediately in front of the motel. So from the south house to the north end of the motel parking lot. And the intent there is to make sure that we keep enough space to expand the parking lot onto now the existing highway. So the existing highway then would be converted to parking area. And then as part of the project, there is a driveway that connects the new highway alignment to the motel property. So that's one way of addressing the increased demand that's occurring with the light station, which is wonderful. And we hope to continue that partnership and have them continue to use that. So the access to and from the highway, it should be perfectly safe. It's going to be a well-designed driveway that connects, and we should have the opportunity for additional parking in that area. The balance of public use and preservation of resources, that's something that Parks does all the time. I mean, that is what we do, and that is our main issues that we deal with. So that is one of the reasons for designing a coastal trail, because reality is people will hike the coast, whether you design something for them to hike the coast or not. It's an attraction to people, and it should be. That's where people want to go. So by designing a trail and laying out an actual path of travel, we can focus that use around sensitive areas and manage the use in a way that protects the elephant's heels, protects wetlands, protects any archaeological resources, and that's what that trail alignment does. It's a sustainable trail that avoids most of those areas and minimizes the impacts. If we don't design a trail, essentially what happens is the highway will be realigned. People will find a way to get along the coast. They'll take the easy path to travel down the beach, which is usually downslope through a creek and down the middle of the creek to get to the beach, and that causes a lot more damage and impact than if you design a trail that provides some opportunity for them to safely and easily get to a beach area while still traversing the coastline. So that's something we certainly are looking at. Including the MPAs on the maps, I think it's a really good idea, and we'll update our maps with that. Let me think what else. Oh, any restrictions on use? Yes, so the scenic easement that lays on top of the current properties that are part of that north coast portion of Hearst and Simeon State Park, those would still apply to the property that gets transferred over with this. So that includes a provision for no camping, no fires, day use only. So those are the restrictions that are there. That's part of the scenic easement. The only area that's outside of that easement is the existing former Piedras Blancas Motel property. So that we do intend to have a concession operate the cafe there, as well as some overnight opportunities there. So that would be, whether it's camping or motelling or is some sort of overnight accommodation. But that's on the existing property that's there. That would be the only difference. And I think that's it for the...
So based on that statement, it says proposed cabins on this graphic here.
On which...
I don't know. The only one we have...
That exhibit that I showed you...
just south of the hotel there.
There's a comment about
there's, cabins. There's a, yeah, there's a separate project. So that this is not part of this project. There's a separate project that ultimately we're going to put out a request for proposals for a concession operation for the motel once it's brought up to code. That proposal, when the proposers do ultimately submit proposals, could include adding overnight accommodations there, which would include little camping cabins or something.
So is that on the same motel property?
On the same motel property. Yes, we couldn't do anything outside of the motel property. We are prohibited from doing that.
All right. So Commissioner Irving.
Just a couple of quick questions before I know Commissioner Topping has a bunch. Could you explain to me the difference between the marine sanctuary and marine protected area?
That is a really good question, huh? The marine protected areas are part of the state system of protecting marine resources, and the National Marine Sanctuary is really a federal system of sanctuaries. So really it's more a jurisdictional thing. From a practical standpoint, for you and I who go out and use the resources, there's regulations and restrictions that are a little bit different, and it depends on what those classifications are. So usually it's regulation on commercial use, on commercial fishing, on recreational fishing, on any sort of take, and they're structured on different levels. So there's the highest level of protection, which is essentially you can enjoy it from a viewshed standpoint, and you can enjoy going in there, but don't take anything.
Don't touch. Yeah.
To a more engaged area, like in the sanctuary, there are areas where you could commercially harvest, but it's regulated.
So I was glad to hear that you're going to add those to your maps. What do you have a website now that is showing this in the proposal and all of that? Has that been developed?
That shows all of the
proposed realignment project and coastal trail.
But we can certainly do that. We can certainly add that. The marine protected areas and the marine sanctuary, we can add that to our map. Obviously, it's not something we actually manage.
Right.
But we're recognizing that.
Well, I'm just looking forward, as I believe Ms. Webb was talking about, how we here and the public can track this project as you go forward, knowing a common, if you have a dedicated website just for the project that we can go to and see where you are, and see maybe in greater detail than what we've been given here today. Obviously, there's confusion I had about which road is which line and all that. That would be very useful.
Yeah, we could add that to the Hearst-San Simeon
State
Park.
And if I might, Mr. Chair, I had a question for Caltrans while I'm...
Is Caltrans here?
Yes. Okay. She's back at the table. Given the comments from the public about speed, and certainly having experienced myself as you come out of the narrow or the upper part of Highway 1 and seeing how people floor it and get out, have you guys given consideration to a passing lane or a larger road impact as where it flattens out and straightens out there so that you could have this issue where those people who have that pent-up demand to go faster and get wherever they're going – could better coexist with those people going to the lighthouse or coming to the elephant seal thing where they have a slower lane or a turn lane?
No, we haven't really considered that. And let me see if I understand your question. You're talking about people coming down Highway 1 and from the windy, narrow
right.
road to the more flat.
There's a natural reaction. It's like, yeah. I've been behind this RV for the last 25 miles.
Right,
and
exactly.
I want to go, and I want to get around it. But you don't have any turning lanes or passing lanes.
I mean, the terrain actually kind of changes quite a bit north of our project. It starts to flatten out up by San Carpoforo.
Right.
So
that's outside of here. This
scope something in our project for the purposes of passing. I don't think that would really help the situation further north. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So what about having a dedicated, widened portion of the highway for people exiting and entering into the lighthouse area or down to, you know, as who was it, Mr. Cooper was talking about, they use Piedras Blancas now as a staging area before they take people to the lighthouse?
Turnpockets. You're talking about turnpockets.
Like a turnpocket.
I'm thinking, this is going to be my question, if I may. You know, an extended, a stacking lane or a staging lane?
Yeah, something of that sort. Is that in your design?
We have a turn pocket channel going into the Piedras Blancas motel, the old former motel, excuse me.
Both north and southbound?
No, just northbound. And that's the only turn pocket that we have. We haven't designed anything going into the Piedras Blancas motel again because the project starts north of that that entrance. The project does include 8-foot shoulders, which should provide plenty of room for people to pull off of the highway and get out of the way. It'll be similar to Sterile Bluffs area where, you know, there doesn't seem to be right now a terrible problem about people trying to turn off the highway and onto the Sterile Bluffs pullouts because there's enough room on the shoulder. If you're driving north on the highway and you have a lot of cars behind you and have a lot of cars coming towards you, you pull off on the highway, wait till it's clear and cross.
I'm hoping that you'll really pay attention to what was said here and design that in, because I can see with increased usage and this design, it looks great, and I can see all of a sudden you're going to have a lot more people wanting to go there, and there could be some significant impacts. But that's me. My question. Thank you.
All right. I think I'll go to Commissioner Topping, since it's your district. I'll let you jump in there.
Can I? I apologize for interrupting kind of the flow, but there's a couple of things that we've been all kind of working on in the background a little bit since the hearing first started. There are basically two issues that haven't really been touched on much in the presentation. One is screening. There's really only a couple of areas, really one area that needs screening, and it's because there are existing homes. There are four existing homes on the east side of the highway. When the highway is moved, they will be taking out two of those homes in order to move the highway, leaving two there. As a result, that people driving north, well, and south, but mostly north is, I think, where the potential view impacts would be, will be driving much closer to these homes. And our local coastal plan policies basically require us to screen development as much as possible from particularly in that area, which is a scenic viewshed and, you know, highly sensitive and quite a rare resource in the state and in our county. And so that is one very large issue that the Coastal Commission is going to be addressing in their permitting process, and I know has been working very thoroughly and closely with Caltrans on. It's also something that the county really has an interest in seeing accommodated because it's part of our local coastal plan. And so Caltrans is, I believe, was able to get their screening plan. They're working on maybe trying to get some simulations, although I'm not sure if we'll be able to get them here in time, to give the public an idea of what they would be looking at when they drive down the highway now. This is one component that the Coastal Commission will definitely be considering, and so I think it would behoove us to discuss it today. And I think that we've gotten to the point where we might be able to give your commission and the public some information on that. The one other piece is the fact that there is a gap in the trail, which was mentioned. It's because it's on a private one of those four homes that has not yet been acquired. At least the condemnation action hasn't been completed yet. And because the trail is really integral to this project, has been presented, there are a few different options for where that trail may or may not go, which I think might be good for your commission to consider, because it's something that, again, the Coastal Commission would also consider when they get a hearing on this permit, which I believe is in July. So those are the two elements that I wanted to make sure were brought up in this public hearing process. And actually, I would advise, if it's up to your discretion, but if there are members of the public who maybe have additional comments after this additional information is provided, it might be useful for us to open it back up to them. And I'm also not sure if it might help or maybe raise more questions that your commission might have. Hopefully it'll bring a broader perspective to the project.
So if I got it right, the two issues were screening and the other was trail location?
Yes, and that one gap.
And the gap.
Right.
You might understand that area is subject to litigation.
Correct. So there's an imminent domain action that's proceeding, although somewhat stalled at this point, mostly because of this permitting process. So that has not yet been resolved. There was other litigation over the two parcels you see to the on the left-hand side of the screen. That has been resolved. And that's what's enabling Caltrans to take out the two houses that are closest to the coast, as well as to actually take title to all of the property that will be west of the highway. Again, there is a gap now. At this point in time, there is a gap for that one parcel on the right-hand side. As it stands, there's a gap because Caltrans does not have title to that western side of the property. And so the trail, it's sort of up in the air, we're not really sure what would happen with it.
Is the roadway, though, that is settled? They do have the right-of-way for the road to move?
Not yet.
That's still part of the litigation.
Yes. Although they do have the right, because they have taken the formal action through the Transportation Commission to take the property. At this point, it's really just the amount of compensation. So the highway itself is fine.
Correct.
There'd
just be a gap in the alignment of the California Coast Trail. So the land needed for the highway has been resolved. It's just we're in negotiations on impacts to those properties.
All right.
So they have the right and the ability to go out and complete the highway once they get their coastal development permit. But in terms of legal right to build the highway there, that has been assured through the legal processes that are required in order to condemn property. It's just the compensation really hasn't been resolved yet with the property owner.
So I had a question.
Or the county master.
The staff letter talks about the coastal development permit for the trail. It doesn't mention the permit for the highway. Is the highway subject to a coastal development permit? Is that part of the same process through the Coastal Commission, this joint application?
That's kind of why we're here. Caltrans has applied for a coastal development permit to construct the new alignment. How the new alignment and the California Coast Trail are going to be connected is a bit of a question right now. Sure.
But the highway...
Yeah, so real quickly, I mean, the project that was submitted was for the realignment of the highway. But through either an interagency agreement, MOA, some agreement, Caltrans and State Parks has been cooperating to accomplish the coastal trail. So that's going to be accomplished through an interagency agreement of some sort between Caltrans and State Parks.
I don't believe that the trail itself is going to be permitted by Coastal Commission through the action that they're considering on the highway. But I think that the highway action, just they want to make sure it doesn't get in the way of a future trail project, if that makes sense. And definitely correct me if I'm wrong by people who know more about the specifics, but I think that's the intent, is the trail, you know, because of the new ability of state parks to actually build a trail in that segment, because the state, you know, as a whole will be owning the property from the whole western side of the highway, then that's why they've been kind of looked at together and I think presented together today.
Okay, so we have a consolidated permit
for the highway
process for the highway with California Coastal Commission being the agency that's doing the processing of it.
Correct.
For the highway.
Correct. And with the county, you know, providing significant amount of comments and input into that process.
But then it says all here, the coastal trail will be addressed for a coastal development permit. Now, is that not the same permit that...
It is not the same.
Coastal Commission is looking at? Is that going to be a permit that's coming back to us then at some point?
The way that the coastal staff characterized it was regarding the trail. We are also working with involved parties to streamline the proper permitting process so all aspects of the overall project features, including the construction and opening of the California Coastal Trail, can move forward expeditiously. So at this point, coastal staff is working on it. May or may not be a separate permit.
Okay, but there is a coastal development permit which will come through here.
Perhaps not.
No.
Sounds like if Coastal Commission decides to include the trail as part of the approval that they are looking at in connection with the highway project. Does that make sense?
Yes. Or the trail, or the coastal could process the trail as a separate CDP themselves, since it's being looked at, and since they'll be somehow conditioning this interagency agreement as part of the highway project.
So right now we're the eyes and the ears of the Coastal Commission for the moment. Is that basically why we're discussing this today?
Yes.
And it does apply to both projects. And
yeah.
So we're looking at the highway and we're looking at the commission, or the trail. And the purpose is to have a public hearing on both projects.
And it does include the trail.
It does include it.
I think that needs to be made clear if we're vetting both of them or only one of them. Yeah.
Well, I think we need to treat it that way for hearing
purposes.
Exactly.
Hearing purposes,
even if it doesn't turn out that way.
I know. I think Caltrans wants to clarify something. We didn't apply to the Coastal Commission for a permit to build the trail. So if the Coastal Commission conditions the highway realignment project to construct the trail, I don't know how that works. And they're evidently working on trying to give me some explanation on how that will work. Because we've done all the environmental review. We've given them an enormous application packet showing all of our impacts and our mitigation. And to condition the highway realignment project with a permit to construct a coastal trail without any information about the impacts the coastal trail is going to have is confusing to me.
So the trail is not part of the project description for the EIR?
No.
Okay, well then you're probably looking at a whole
new
process.
They don't have any information right now about the impacts that the trail will create and how those will be mitigated. So I'm confused. I've asked them to explain it. And they're kind of in the process of trying to draw up an explanation and tell me how that's going to work.
Is it safe to say that the parameters for the entire configuration of both facilities would be set with the highway alignment and acquisition and construction? In other words, you're going to create some defined constraints for the coastal trail by virtue of the processing of the alignment and the approval of the highway project by the Coastal Commission? I mean, just in broadly speaking.
Yeah, I mean, the trail essentially is in the mitigation. So as the mitigation is considered, that's the reason for the coordination is you don't want, you know, one project to move forward and create a mitigated area and come back later and propose a project through the mitigation.
Right.
So that's the coordination, is so that the highway proposed project then considers how that trail is going to pass through the mitigation, and that's the reason for the coordination, and that's what the interagency agreement is. Okay.
So from a CEQA perspective, then it might be thought of kind of loosely as a tiered process, the highway coming first and kind of setting the stage for the trail.
Correct. I think maybe the best way to think about it, this whole setup is, if you were to look at our coastal access requirements in the county's own LCP, it contemplates something akin to a tiered process where you get a discretionary project that's come in and it triggers the need for coastal access, and then you look at whether it makes sense to require the actual construction of the trail at that point in time or the access way at that point in time. Perhaps maybe it doesn't make sense depending on the level of environmental review or the level of actual use and intensity of the use on that access way. So in this case, it could be that perhaps they have looked at it enough environmentally with State Parks' help and involvement to come up with an actual plan for where the trail would go and how it would be used. Maybe it turns out they don't have enough information, but as a part of the coastal development permit for the highway, it would trigger at least an analysis of whether coastal access is required under the county's local coastal plan. And so perhaps maybe just an offer to dedicate would be sufficient or appropriate in that instance, or maybe something a little bit more with some more detail would make sense, depending on how much information the Coastal Commission has at that point in time and whether or not all the findings could be made that to set forth where the trail would need to go and how it would be constructed. So that's how it might be helpful to look at it. It's a matter of conditioning the coastal development permit with access requirements, and then how far does that condition go towards spelling out exactly where and how they would be built or not built. So it's very dependent on the amount of information that the commission has when they make their decision, just like it would be for us, for the county. Does that help?
Yeah.
Okay.
Took a lot of questions.
Yeah, we'll go ahead. Yeah, good. So basically dealing with the Caltrans permit for the road, but we're also looking at the trails at the same time.
Yeah,
so
you
can address both of them.
We're kind of the advance guard in that regard. because this project, as I see it, is parts of it are already fixed or set in the details. Namely the eastward extension of the road alignment, is that correct? You can't go any further east because that deal was done on the way here several years back.
Right.
So regardless of whether 100 feet erodes from the coast or 200 feet or however far it turns out to be, given the changes that are occurring with sea level rise, this either goes from a 100-year project to a 50-year project or whatever, but
yeah.
But that's the easterly edge. If I got this right.
The Hearst, that 500-foot boundary,
yeah,
is the easterly edge.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So that's fixed.
Just so that conservation easement over the Hearst property prohibits Caltrans from ever building a highway on Hearst property.
I don't know forever.
So that.
The conservation. We'll have Paul Martinez come up. He's a project manager.
Anything's possible in the future.
Conservation easement on the Hearst land prohibits Caltrans from ever having to realign the highway further east.
The agreements that...
Can you give your name, please?
I'm sorry, Paul Martinez, Caltrans project manager. The series of agreements that were entered into in 2005 was part of the Hearst conservation agreements. What they allowed was... I'll just kind of step through this so you kind of get the whole picture. But the existing lands, the Hearst lands, on the west side of the existing highway have been transferred into public ownership into State Parks Administration. The east side of the highway has been put into a conservation easement on the Hearst lands. As part of the deal, approximately a 500-foot strip was allowed and gifted to Caltrans for realignment of the highway because of the continuing erosion. And we could realign the highway in however many times we needed to within that area. Okay, in this particular case, the erosion is happening so rapidly, we're going to use up that 500-foot area in one shot. But basically, the way the width of that realignment area came about was kind of based on the expected erosion of the coast over the next 100 years. And so in this case, the roadway is, the anticipated erosion rate is nearly 5 feet per year in some spots. And so we have realigned the highway up to the eastern edge of that realignment boundary. Now, if we needed to move the highway further east, it would require further negotiation with the Hearst Corporation, renegotiating any of the terms of what happens with the land in between the realigned highway and the existing highway. So we feel, as part of the project, that a 100-year goal of protecting the highway is reasonable based on the rate and what we know about the area, including the wetlands and cultural sites that occur. And we looked at alignments that go east of the Hearst boundary and found the impacts, environmental impacts, were actually greater. So,
but we're going to have to go there anyway.
Well,
we're going to go there 100 years. We're going to build this
in
highway
100
twice.
Years, in 100 years, we're going to have to, or depending on how the
we're having
road,
twice the impact.
We may have to. In 100 years, are we going to be driving cars? I don't know. But 100 years was reasonable
the
horizon to look at for realignment of this highway. So if we're still driving cars in 100 years, there may be a need to go and revisit moving the highway inland even further. But at this point, 100 years seems like a reasonable goal. The Coastal Act requires a 75-year setback for building development from the coastline. This satisfies that requirement, the 100 years we're looking at, along with what we anticipate a long life, useful life of the bridges that are being constructed. So it all kind of blends in to give you a reasonable life of the highway.
All right. Thank you. Commissioner Irving, your light's on. Did you have a question at this point? Or?
Actually, it wasn't, but I did want to follow up on County Council's question about raising the issue of screening and how, there you go, Caltrans might want to weigh in on screening.
Yeah, I think at this point, if staff has a couple issues they want to bring up, we need to get them out on the floor so we can get them into the record.
What's Thailand doing?
Was it a good trip?
Okay. This is how I scroll through them right here.
Yep.
Okay. Okay. We just had my supervisor bring me the most recent screen plantings simulations to help screen the views of the
homes that will remain after the realignment is completed. So these are all the viewpoints in which he created the photo simulations. When the highway is realigned, or actually before the highway is realigned, the western house where the highway pretty much is on top of, and the house to the left will be gone. And this is a simulation looking northwest from the future Highway 1 alignment. This is the driveway fill prism that will be leading west towards the two wells that will remain to service the easternmost Sawney residents. Again, this is a view of that access road that will remain. And the picture is just trying to show that it's pretty consistent with the rural character up there. It's not on a big fill. We've designed the slopes to be gradual, so they're not very noticeable, and planted with just native scrub vegetation. This is looking northwest from Highway 1 realignment. And you can see that it blocks the views of the residences and still maintains the views of the hills. Looking east, straight towards the residences, doing a pretty good job of blocking the views.
Is this proposed screening?
This is proposed screening,
yeah. It's not there.
This isn't there. Some of these, if you look, I think this right here may be existing screen planting that's around the homes. I'm not.
Are there remaining?
Yeah, there are pockets.
Yeah, there's some cypress.
Pockets of
the
trees.
The property owner was required to screen his house, too, when they built the property.
So. Are the remaining homeowners being compensated for their loss of views?
Our screen planting concept should not affect their views. They
should or will
should,
not?
Should not affect the views from their homes to the ocean. It should make no difference because, I'll show you in a minute. The screen planting is further west from their homes, so they'll still have areas of ocean views from their houses. This is looking southeast to the, this is a driveway.
But to answer my question, are they being compensated for any loss of views?
We're still in negotiations with
not
that.
The initial bid.
This is looking north from Piedras Blancas Motel, pretty much depicting that the views of the houses aren't really being seen or the driveways from that location. And again, looking west from the future highway near the southernmost driveway. This is the driveway. This is Dr. Sawney's driveway now. And we're proposing to remove the pavement. Is that not right? Oh, that's Welsh's. That's Mr. Welsh's driveway. Sorry. And that is looking east towards Mr. Welsh's house. That's it for the visual simulations.
So is that the same view we saw with the proposed screening? Is this a different driveway than the screening you showed us earlier, back a few slides?
Well, yeah. I mean, there probably were slides in here looking. Let's see. Paul, maybe you can come up here and do this because you're better at describing
this
where
one,
these
yeah,
are.
Is that the same driveway there? That's what I'm getting at is.
2.6.
Paul Martinez, Caltrans. Go back to the there. Okay, right there. Okay, as you're approaching from the south, this is the planting that occurs along the right-of-way and in front of what we'll call the Dr. Sawney's parcels. Okay, so You're looking towards the Dr. Sarni's homes and Mr. Welsh's home. And so you can see that the screen planting is pretty much hiding those two homes in this view. Okay, now if we go to the next one.
Other way?
Keep going. Okay, right before that.
Sorry.
Okay, this is as you get to Dr. Sani's driveway, okay? And the front two homes that Dr. Sani owned, we've acquired, those houses are now taken out, so you don't see those two homes in this view. So the Dr. Sani's remaining home to the east of those two front two parcels are screened by this vegetation here. Okay, now if we go to the next one, five, go to viewpoint six, the other way. One more.
Six.
Okay, now this is the view as you get right to Dr. Sani's driveway. Okay, the house, and you can see the cypresses up there by the home. That's the planting that was required by the previous property owner when he developed this home. And it pretty well screened the highway from the existing highway. Now, you'll see the planting that's put there in front. That's what we propose in front of this property. And so, again, this is what you're going to see as you pass that driveway for that fraction of a second as you're going past it. Or if you're along the highway, and if you're say on the shoulder on the west side of the highway, where people may be using this part as part of the coastal trail, what they might see in passing that driveway.
So, do you guys have any simulations of the view from these home sites and what they lose?
We're developing those, and what we've put together, and they're not really prepared for public consumption yet. But we're the views that you see. And we've tried to use the photographs that we had at the time. And again, some of these, particularly one parcel, is still in litigation. But when we had access to the property and we took pictures, we've looked at those pictures with the planting that's in there. The views from both the remaining Sani home and the Welsh home, those views, you see houses, the two front houses that were out there on the front Sani parcels. Those houses are now gone. So what you'll see is you'll see some of the planting, but the planting is low enough elevation, it's not obstructing the views of the ocean. If anything, it's kind of screening the view of the highway from those homes. So it's something we will be discussing with the property owners, but basically we feel that the screen planting is not going to or shouldn't impede their views from their homes.
So
any discussion about compensation for that is premature at this point. We haven't had those discussions and shown those viewpoints yet.
So does any commission have questions on screening specifically at this point or comments? And what is staff's concern? Why do we need this brought up? You said you wanted to bring it up. Or is there, the staff concur with this plan or they have issues with it?
Well, I'm not sure if planning staff concurs with the screening plan or not. My concern was just wanting to raise it as an issue for discussion for your commission and for the public who will be driving on the new highway. And to get comments that we can forward on to the Coastal Commission, because I know they will be looking at that issue in great detail.
I might make a comment at this point. It appears to me, because I'm familiar with the road and the houses out there, that basically the screening was taken care of when they originally built the houses. There are very mature cypress trees, et cetera. It appears to me that your screening is more out at the point of contact where the ingress and egress is not. They already can't see out of their house because of the cypress trees, is my point. And your screening is kind of in a lower format.
Well, they do have some views, but our screening is in anticipation of. When they had those coastal development permits, they screened with landscaping, basically from the existing highway. Right. And the concern here, I think, with County Council and what the Coastal Commission is, are those views? Is that landscape still adequate to screen those homes from the highway?
And you've got lighting too, a headlight type of screening, I would presume.
Well, not so much because of the direction of the traffic. Okay. But in anticipation of that question from Coastal, we've developed this screening, and there's likely going to be some discussion during the CDP hearing about the adequacy of that screening. And that's why I'm saying is it's still kind of developing. But we believe we have a very good proposal for screening that hides the homes from the view of the highway but doesn't prevent the views from the homes. And when we get through the hearing for the CDP, that may change. It may be tweaked a little bit, but I don't believe there's going to be a substantial change on that proposal.
I want to get to the commissioner from the district. He's got a lot of questions, so let's get back to that.
I'm happy to supply the Coastal Commission with this service, but I do have a few questions from a standpoint of at least of a citizen within the area. And so I'll try to select those questions which, in my view, are most important. From the standpoint of sustainability of the projects, plural. First of all, I was interested to see the view of the boardwalk and Moonstone Beach, and which I'm very familiar with. If you could do something about the dog poop, that would be great. But in any event, I noticed it has been relocated already because of coastal bluff erosion. There's a wow of the National Academy of Sciences projection of sea level rise in July 2012, which is the definitive source of guidance at this point of between 4.5 to 5.5 feet over by the end of the century. I guess the question is, has that figure been taken into account in the coastal erosion as well as the other engineering aspects of either of these projects, because it would affect the life of the project? And I'll just leave it as an open-ended question. To what extent has the NRC official figures been accommodated, and or was it too late by the time those came out to make any difference? Probably the latter, but I defer to whomever from Caltrans can, since that's the outer parameter.
Sure. Sea level rise is an interesting topic, and all the impacts of that are very difficult. And what we've used for this project is what the state standard is using now for a sea level rise of 55 inches.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What we have done to show what we're doing for sea level rise is plotted an inundation map of where that 55 inches does and what happens to the shoreline with that 55-inch rise. And what we've shown is the highway will withstand that. Some of the places that are inundated go under the bridges, so our bridges are getting over where that sea level rise is. Okay. That's from an inundation standpoint. Any change in the intensity or the magnitude of erosion is a very difficult question to get to. And it's very dependent on the intensity of storms, the direction of storms, the currents in the ocean. I mean, it could be quite a research project to nail down what that's going to be. The requirements for this project at this point is to follow what the state guidelines are for that 55-inch sea level rise, and we've done that for this project. So how the erosion happens out there is very episodic. I mean, while we've characterized it as a 100-year shoreline and we've talked about an annual rate of maybe up to 5 feet per year, that doesn't mean that this year that bluff's going to erode 5 feet. What happens is with the intensity and the direction of storms, you may lose nothing in 1 year. In another year, you may lose 15 feet, but on the average, it's working out to approximately just under 5 feet per year. So we can't really nail down what the erosion rate's going to be over the next few years, but we're pretty confident in what's going to happen over 100 years based on what method that we use to develop that erosion map.
So the inundation map is part of the record. the environmental record that will go forward to the California Coastal Commission?
They have.
That information has been provided to
the
Coastal.
Yeah, okay. And presumably any structures or construction that the highway would envision or is envisioned for the highway would actually be consistent with that inundation map.
Yes, the okay. highway is protected from inundation, and like I say, where the inundation occurs inland of the alignment occurs under the bridges.
Okay, so my corollary question would be to state parks, is the present conceptual trail alignment consistent with that inundation map?
Yes, it considers that inundation map, okay. But portions of it will be inundated. So and that's the reason for moving it where it is rather than staying right along the bluff edge, is to anticipate something that is a little longer lasting and that easier to maintain and not something we have to constantly be retreating back. Okay. The boardwalks have a lifespan, so the intent is to have that lifespan be consistent with when we would need to replace it anyways. And then the bridges are prefab bridges that can be disassembled and moved and relocated in other locations. So that's the way that we're anticipating it. We recognize any trails along the coast are temporary.
Right.
And so we're constantly adjusting to that.
I was thinking specifically about kind of the precedent for this kind of activity, which is Surfers Beach in Ventura, where the bicycle trail was moved back 100 feet, which may or may not be enough ultimately, but it was done with state money, the California Coastal Conservancy money. And it's the beginning of a whole series of incremental adjustments along the coast.
Different than the existing highway, but not significantly different. And so, yes, people may be driving faster. At some point, the type of highway that this is will be posted at 55 miles an hour and will be an enforcement issue above that. But we feel the need to put the 8-foot shoulders out there is very important because of the nature of the travelers on this. People from all over the world, the views from the highway are spectacular, and while people should be watching the road, they're watching the beautiful view. So we think it's important from a safety standpoint to have those 8-foot shoulders and a 12-foot traveled way. And, you know, about the only way we could reduce speeds is to introduce a lot more horizontal curves into the project. As we've talked about, this is a very sensitive area, and we've tried to avoid any further impacts to wetlands and coastal prairie, and that kind of thing would require a lot more of that. So we've tried to be sensitive to both highway safety impacts on the resources out there. And, you know, people are going to drive what they're going to drive. And
Commissioner Toplin, I think the four-lane section you saw was an example of landform
grading. It was a landform grading. That's right. I was just about to admit that. I'm sorry.
It wasn't this project.
I forgot. Okay. And then are these the only ownerships that where you talked about the screening? Is it, those the only other ownerships in the area? I take it that it's all Hearst except for those couple of parcels?
Well, there is a Hearst Ranch house.
Okay.
It's just located just south of the Sawney parcel.
Yeah, from a wetland standpoint, this actually is going to, how many acres of wetlands will be enhanced? Does anybody know? It's
2.85 acres.
2.85 acres.
My name is Jennifer Moonjan. I'm the biologist on the project. About 2.85 acres will be restored on the existing alignment once the old culverts and the floodplains are restored and graded.
So it's a slight expansion of wetlands. Yeah, they'll expand themselves.
Yeah. We're going to remove the fill,
yeah.
The road base and the fill, and then regrade to fit more natural topography in the drainages. And those are what will make up the 2.85 acres of restored wetlands.
Thanks. I think really that's the extent of my main questions. I think there will be a lot of detail that will go to the Coastal Commission, right, which we may or may not see on its way.
All right. Commissioner Meyer?
I just want to ask a couple of questions with respect to some of the public speakers' questions. This project and the project to the north with the slides, are those timed differently? Are they going to be at separate times? Are they going to be happening at the same time, or do we know?
At this point, it's hard to say the timing. I mean, the elephant trunk slide is, I mean, with the action that your commission took this morning, that kind of speeds up that CDP, and it'll move along. This project, we're still waiting for that CDP. Hopefully, we'll get our permit, you know, in July or shortly after. And we would like to be in construction next spring. Now, the two going together, are they going to affect each other? No, because while elephant trunk slide repair will have some temporary closures, because the travelers are on the same roadway that the work's being done, that's not going to affect this project, and that this project is being completely built separate from the existing highway until they just make the actual conforms to the existing highway.
Is there a
cut? They're not going to impact each other that way.
Is the cut and fill balanced on these projects, or is there going to be truck trips taking fill somewhere, our materials away?
There's going to be some fill, some excavation that's going to have to be carted out, mostly because the restoration of the existing highway happens after the roadway is built. So there will be some, all the removal of the pavement and some of the base out there will all have to be removed off the highway. And then the removal of the rock slope protection that's protecting the highway right now at the highest erosion area will be hauled off, and that happens after the traffic has moved over to the new highway. So there will be some.
And that has been compensated for within the EIR, those truck trips?
That was talked about, how much removal there would be. At the time of the EIR, you know, that was kind of a one number that we knew at the time. We've been doing a lot of tweaking to the project since that EIR, so the numbers may be a bit different, but it's still in kind of a similar order of magnitude.
And while you're up here, the lane width.
We're going to comply with our coastal development permit until someone says you can't remove rock. And right. So
you're going to do your best to protect whatever environment has been created since those rocks were installed.
If there's some kind of habitat there that is established since we put that rock in that prevents us from moving it, there's going to have to be some discussion between the Coastal Commission, who has a requirement for us to remove it, and the Department of Fish and Wildlife on how far out we can go to remove that. So that will occur.
Okay. Thank you.
Let me just say something. There's a potential for some of the rock to contain critical habitat for black abalone. So we're in the process right now of doing a study. That should be done shortly. If the primary constituent elements are there, then we'll have to start negotiating with the NIMS? Yeah, National Marine Fisheries Service, and figuring out ways to avoid impacting that habitat, so just to clarify.
Okay, now comes the editorializing part of my comments. It seems to me like we know that this is going to erode away within 100 years, and yet it's too complicated to go that far in our minds, and we don't want to deal with all the issues. And so we live within the constraints of what the law allows us to live within, which is let's build the highway here and we'll build another highway in 100 years, which seems kind of dumb to me, because we're basically doing all this to protect the environment. We're doing so many things to protect the environment, and yet we're going to build the highway twice in 200 years, which is doing twice as much damage. It seems to me that we should think about taking it to the next level. We should be discussing with the landowners further to the east about how to move the road to the east, knowing full well that it's going to happen within some amount of time. And yet, in the interim, we spend money buying houses that we really wouldn't have had to have bought if we put put the highway further to the east. I'm just a little frustrated by that. but I don't really think there's a solution because it's.
You realize how long it took in negotiations, years and years and years with Hearst? You want to turn around and do it again?
But I also remember when I could walk 100 and something feet further west in my lifetime. So it's going to happen. It's just we're going to spend, as a state and as taxpayers, we're going to spend the money twice.
Well, now what I heard was that the inundation boundary is accommodated by the highway. Did I misunderstand?
For 100 years, though.
Inundation, not necessarily erosion.
This is the 55-inch inundation. And
well, okay, there's a couple things here. First, how did we come up with the erosion, expected erosion, the shoreline 100 years? And what we did is we've looked at historical records of erosion to extrapolate that out, okay? And that's how we've come up with areas that have anticipated erosion rates of up to just under 5 feet per year. Okay. Then the inundation is a little different. That's sea level rise. Okay. So if you leave the sea level rise out of it right now, the erosion of the bluff is going to occur, we anticipate, up to that 5 feet per year average annual rate. That's required how far back we're moving the highway. Okay. So now we take that realigned highway based on where the erosion is occurring, and then we apply the sea level rise, and then we look at what the inundation is going to be. Is it satisfactory to deal with that inundation? Yes, it is. And so the amount we moved it back because of erosion accommodates the sea level rise.
Which seems backwards now that you say it, because the storm surge is the primary factor which affects coastal bluff erosion, right?
Right.
And so if you've got a rising sea level, it's not happening in a vacuum. It actually is allowing the storms to eat further into the land than you have allowed for. That's what I hear.
And that's the part
underlying what you're saying.
And that's the part that's, like I say, is a major research project to determine this rise. What does it mean for what is its impact or effect on the erosion rate? And that, again, that's hard to say because it depends on the intensity of the storms, the direction of the storms. There's an awful lot of variables involved there that would take well beyond the time that we need to get this roadway realigned because the erosion right now is affecting the highway as it is. So we didn't want to go and do the research project. We're going to move it, protect the highway, and maybe the tools will be available for if the highway needs to be moved again in the future, the tools will be available to be able to predict.
So we would get with you to have you review it.
Just to have me look at it and not bring it back to the commission necessarily?
No.
Okay. So is there any other questions or comments or anything else? It was brought up by county council about trail location in the gap. I don't know what, if anything, we can comment on that, especially if it's being negotiated and litigated as to where that trail is going to end up.
We just want a trail.
I mean, we do want to have a trail.
Can I comment on that gap?
Sure.
There is no real gap. I mean, it looks like there's a gap in the green line, okay, because what happens when you get to those private inholdings? The Streets and Highways Code allows pedestrians to be on the shoulder of the highway. So until the situation of all the acquisitions is fully resolved, the plan is the trail can come up onto the state right-of-way and get past the parcels and then back down. So there's nothing about the project that at this point that prevents a full continuous coastal trail through the area.
What's happening to the existing right-of-way? Why you can't utilize existing Highway 1 right-of-way for your trail?
Actually, that was explored, and when we did the EIR, State Parks at the time wanted us to preserve a lot of that existing alignment. Since then, we've decided that it's better to restore the old highway and put the trail where it really needs to go rather than just follow this artificial linear element. So there's places where we are going to utilize part of the existing highway, and that's in front of the motel. which is coastal trail related because it's visitor serving in front of the motel there. And there's other places where it doesn't make sense. So there's a better place for that trail than along the existing
highway. Yeah, on the map, it appears that the existing roadway would make a better substitute trail mm-hmm. than using Highway 1. It's closer to the proposed trail, and it doesn't have any vehicle traffic on it, if that's just throwing a suggestion out there, if it's there.
Right. And part of the discussion.
Even if you don't do anything to it, people use it anyway.
Yeah. Can we make the area look natural, or do we want this artificial looking linear element?
Well, you could tape the asphalt up, the dirt will still be there. I mean,
it would be there. But again, it's a nice straightaway. Is that what you're looking for in a trail, or do you want a trail that kind of follows the topography? And we've discussed this with state parks for quite a few years and decided that the best thing to do is restore as much and provide a trail that. It follows the existing, the more natural terrain, and looks like a trail, not a highway.
Well, the delightful thing about the boardwalk in Moonstone Beach is that it does follow the bluff, and very deliberately. And in that sense, I think it speaks to the principle that you want to, your people want a coastal experience. Mm-hmm. They don't want a highway experience if they're walking.
Mr. Chair, can I weigh in on this just
sure.
a little bit? Steve McMaster's planning staff. One of the concerns is that in the identification, what we were calling the gap, really the plan that had been identified, at least tentatively, was that the coastal trail would follow an alignment between the ocean and the highway up to the point of the private properties, and then would make a straight line up to the highway, walk along the highway, and then back down the northern side of the property boundary to another more natural trail alignment. And we had concerns regarding that, and I think that's one of the issues that would be important to note or to send comments on to the Coastal Commission. I think from a staff perspective, we had concerns regarding whether or not that was really a realistic, appropriate user experience and appropriate alignment. Also, I would have real questions as to whether anybody would actually use it or whether you just have people knocking down the fence and going across the private property if you created a situation like that. In regards to using the highway, I think one of the issues is where the first picture was where the waves are actually landing on the existing highway with the rocks in place. I think it's pretty much anticipated that removal of those rocks will probably eat into the existing highway alignment fairly quickly. So it's probably an area where you'd want to at least have the trail somewhat inland of the existing highway alignment. And probably using the highway alignment in that location may not get you very much a life on the trail itself.
Well, just to comment on that, I think it would be self-defeating to think of a jog that makes a big U-shaped eastward alignment, then northward, and then back westward, and then to go northward continuously, or vice versa. So if you want a comment from us or from an interested party, that's my comment.
Given what Mr. McMaster just said, if they pull the rocks out, and you
give that property back to the underlying fee owner, because the highway is actually just an easement given its age, basically. Mm-hmm. So these are all the concerns with that one little gap. I know it's small, but it's still something that I think is appropriate for you to consider kind of with the idea that if you were looking at this permit, what would you want to see there? And that's why I wanted to make sure we talked about that issue as well as the screening issue, because that's something that your commission would probably look very closely at as well. So.
Well, the answer to that, a simple answer, would be to realign the trail to the limits of erosion, say, within 75 years. In other words, a moderate expectation of time for erosion to take place and work its way inland, and yet be somewhat short of the new highway alignment. Would that not be?
And that's essentially what they're trying to do.
Yeah,
I think
yeah.
in negotiation. It's yeah. in negotiation.
Well, I think we should give direction. That's what we want.
Yeah.
As well.
I mean, we would like to see this. Well, that's the issue. Yeah. How close to the beach? But what about erosion? So.
Yeah. So the maybe the way to say that is
bend the trail to match the limits of erosion short of the highway, the projected highway. Does that do it?
Yeah, it's basically you don't want the trail on the highway, you don't want the, trail on the exact coast. You want the trail somewhere in the middle, which is what they're trying to do. But
so what I heard,
to have a naturalistic character.
Yeah. What I heard Whitney say is that it would be our recommendation that this be a condition of the approval of the project that they build that trail as you just described, which is gives it flexibility. And I'm good with that.
At what point would we have to say anything more officially, or is this part of the record?
This is going to be part of the record.
Letter.
There, yeah.
Okay. All right. Great.
All right. We've got 2 minutes left.
I'm done.
So does anybody else have any other final comment on this project?
No, I got one more final comment.
All right.
I got to say this. This is a remarkable example of good coordination between government agencies. I think the Caltrans and State Parks have done a good job trying to work together on a very complex set of facts that are morphing as they go, and they're trying to do their best to come out on the right end of history.
Very good. At that point, I look for a motion to take all testimony documents into record.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
I look for a motion to adjourn this meeting until... until our
July
next
10th?
Meeting and
July 10th.
July 10th.
So moved.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Meeting adjourned. Thank you.
I hope this thing gets built.